This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Speaking of Thomas Jefferson, Rick Britton is with us. Celebrated award-winning local author, cartographer extraordinaire, online at rickbritton.com. Joins us each week. We talk a little Thomas Jefferson. We give away some pizza. We have a good time. Before we get started, though, you are teaching a class at the Senior Center. Coming up, you start any day now, about the Civil War.
Absolutely. It starts a week from tomorrow on March 17th, the Civil War in Central Virginia. And if you can imagine that swath right across Central Virginia from the Shenandoah Valley through Albemarle County, Charlottesville, Gordonsville, and over to Fredericksburg, we're going to talk about the war as it affected Central Virginia, what happened here during the war, and then what happened to the men and boys from here who went off to fight the battle. We're going to talk about John Singleton Mosby, the Gray Ghost at the University of Virginia, the Charlottesville Artillery at Port Republic, the 19th Virginian Pickett's Charge, the 19th Virginian, the Maryland Campaign, all kinds of great stuff. So they can call down at the Senior Center Travel Office, 974-6538. We're going to have a great time.
There you go. Let me ask you this.
It
must have been really frightening. I mean, when we look back now at the Civil War in Charlottesville, in this area, we see there was a little skirmish at Rio Hill.
Right.
But essentially, the town served the function of a hospital.
Right.
And cared
rail
for.
Center, right.
And the rail center. Trains constantly going through town.
Right.
With supplies, bringing wounded soldiers back from
front.
Right,
exactly.
But there was so much real horror going on nearby.
Right.
In the valley.
Right.
You know, some of these major, major battles happened all around Charlottesville.
And some big battles were fought to defend Charlottesville. So you can imagine how the people felt here.
That's what I'm getting at, yeah.
Guys and boys were out there dying and getting wounded to defend the city of Charlottesville. So we're going to talk about that in my class, too.
I mean, it really is something to think that they...
It
that
is.
They,
it's horrific.
That they must have been thinking the entire time, what's to prevent tomorrow from, you know, what's happening elsewhere in Virginia from happening
here? And the answer was nothing. Yeah, nothing could prevent it.
It really is an amazing
scary,
story.
Scary time. But it's important for people to learn about it. I think important for people to hear those stories to help us, again, appreciate what we have today in this country.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's open up the phone lines at 977-1070. We'll give away a little Domino's pizza thanks to our good friends at Domino's. You want some pizza tonight, tomorrow night? This is how you do it. Give me a call, 977-1070. We'll play our little quiz show here with Rick Britton. And Rick, now it's time for question number one.
All right. Let's start off with a really easy one. Thomas Jefferson believed his most important contribution was A, the authorship of the Declaration of Independence, B, the Louisiana Purchase, C, the founding of the University of Virginia.
Let's go to the phones. Caller, enter and sign in, please. Your first name?
Barbara.
Barbara, how are you?
Oh, fine.
Happy Wednesday.
Oh, thank you.
What are you having for dinner tonight? You already working on it?
Oh, I'm having spaghetti.
Ooh,
oh, that sounds good.
Yum.
You what got some extra?
Oh, yes.
What are you putting in your spaghetti, Barbara? What's the secret at your house?
Oh, it's no secret. It's just just a sauce with onions and...
Mm.
Nice.
I like onions. Do you like onions?
Yeah. Yeah, I like onions.
I like onions. I like peppers, too. Onions, green peppers?
Well, yeah, onion and pepper.
You got some Italian sausage in that sauce?
Well, no, I don't.
Okay.
I don't like that. No, she knows I don't like that. All right, Barbara, hold on and listen to Rick's question. Here it comes again.
You ready, Barbara?
Okay.
Thomas Jefferson believed his most important contribution was A, the Declaration of Independence, B, the Louisiana Purchase, C, the founding of the University of Virginia.
What was the most important?
I'd say the first one.
Absolutely right.
Way to go, Barbara.
Good job.
There you go. Now, how'd you know that? How'd you know? Was that a wild guess?
Well, I think I had read it somewhere a long time ago.
There you go. Good job.
Hey, Barbara, hold on a minute. In addition to your spaghetti, we're going to give you a little pizza. So hold on. Thank you so much for playing. You take care.
Okay.
Hold on. And Leon is going to hook you up with some Domino's pizza. There you go. And Rick?
Yeah.
That was Jefferson's number one thing on his obelisk, right?
That's his
grave marker?
On his tombstone. He actually designed his tombstone and then left us what he wanted inscribed on his tombstone, and that was number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the original one, Disappeared or got ruined during the Civil War or something?
No, by the 1880s, the first one, which is actually a little bit smaller than the one that's up there now, was looking pretty shabby. It was really common in those days for folks going around to historic sites to kind of carve pieces off of things to take them home. So the edges off the obelisks had been kind of cut off, and you know, people had them on their, you know, as door stoppers and stuff like that, the edges off of his obelisk. So Congress voted him a new one, and then they took the original one and moved it out to the University,
St. Louis, right?
The University of Missouri, actually, because it's the first institution of higher learning in the Louisiana Territory.
There you
Pretty
go.
Pretty cool, huh?
So that's where the original one is.
That's where the original one is. Yeah, and they got this little plaque. A friend of mine teaches out there, and he sent me a photograph of it. And I know 10,000 students walk past it every day having no idea what that thing is standing out
there. Used
to
be in the graveyard there at
Tiny
Monticello.
Little plaque.
All right, yeah. What's number two? Let's go to number two.
Number two. True or false, Thomas Jefferson never held a military title. Is that true or false?
Let's go to the phone lines and caller, enter and sign in, please. What's your first name? Hello?
Jonathan.
Jonathan, how you doing? Happy Wednesday.
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for calling. Rick, ask it one more time so Jonathan can hear it.
Jonathan, you ready?
Yes, I am.
True or false, Thomas Jefferson never held a military title?
True.
Ooh!
Oh, Jonathan, take another crack at it. We give you another try.
False.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. That's how you do it, Jonathan. That's how you win on this show. It's very simple.
Winning.
Winning. There you go, Charlie.
Hey, I don't think he's allowed on this show.
Winning. Hold on just a minute, Jonathan. And Leon is going to take care of you. He's on line three and give you some Domino's pizza. There you go. That's how you win it. So he did have a military title.
I thought I would catch somebody with this one. Yeah, he absolutely did. Because while we're still under the British government, he was made the county lieutenant for Albemarle County while he was still in the House of Burgesses. So this is before the American Revolution, which gave him technically the rank of colonel in the Virginia militia.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know if Jefferson ever went around and referred to himself as the colonel, but technically he held that rank up until the American Revolution.
But that's what the Brits like to do. I mean, this is what you did with a gentleman. You threw military rank at him.
That's right.
Well, you don't ever actually have to serve, but some titles.
That's right. But it's in the militia we're talking about.
The colonial militia.
That's right.
Not in the American Revolutionary Army.
Right. So this is the pre-war militia.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. There you go. Hey, we got time for one more really quick. Let us take question number three, Rick.
Okay. Question number three. True or false, Thomas Jefferson attended the Constitutional Convention in 1787. True or false?
There you go. Let's go to the phones. Caller, enter and sign in, please. What's your first name?
Gary.
Gary, how you doing? Happy Wednesday.
How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, but I'll get better. What's going on?
Well, I'm going to take a wild guess. I hope you're as generous with me as you were the last caller.
Gary, I am Mr. Generous.
Everybody wins.
Everybody rides.
Everybody wins, yeah.
I'll try true.
Oh, but you know what? You get two tries with a true and false question.
Try again.
Okay, I'll go false.
That would be false. Yeah,
there you go, absolutely. Gary. That's how you win.
But, you know, it's a common mistake. Lots of folks, including Bill O'Reilly, when he wrote his book on American history for kids, something about kids being the best Americans, wrote about how Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, all those guys who wrote the Constitution, Thomas Jefferson was a little
bit... You mean Bill O'Reilly got his facts wrong? You're kidding.
Yeah.
Not Bill O'Reilly.
Got his facts wrong. Jefferson happened to be in France at the time.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah,
he was in Europe.
So
absolutely.
He was not in Philadelphia.
Gary, hold on just a minute, and Leon's going to hook you up with some pizza, all right?
Thanks.
Absolutely. You have a great night. He is on line one, and Rick, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will continue our conversation about Mr. Jefferson's greatest hits. It's 4:46 here in Charlottesville. Talking about Mr. Jefferson's greatest hits, his greatest contributions. On his grave marker, he only chose three, but you have chose two or three dozen for us to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's about 50, and we've done about a dozen so far, so we've got a ways to go.
Where are we today?
Well, we actually made it up to what he considered his second greatest contribution, the Statute for Virginia for Religious Freedom. He considered that number two. It's right there on the tombstone in between the Declaration of Independence and the founding of the University of Virginia. I think this is one that's probably one of the most mistaken. There's a lot of confusion about this. We, as a British colony, we actually had a state religion, and it was the Anglican Church. And so Jefferson grew up in a colony that was Anglican, and folks, whether they professed the Anglican faith or not, were forced to pay taxes to support the Anglican Church. And of course, as we got more and more settlers in this colony, and then eventually, of course, we became a state during the American Revolution, there were more and more dissenters. So it seemed a pretty obvious thing to do to found religious freedom in Virginia. Jefferson, following the tenets of the Enlightenment, felt that religion was something intensely personal, something that government at any level had no business tinkering with. And here's one of the most famous quotes.
I've actually read it on this program, live on the air, the whole thing.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Okay, but here's a quote relating to his thoughts about religion. "But it does me no injury for my neighbor to say that there are 20 gods or no God. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg." Here's how the statute actually went out. This is number section two out of it. "We, the General Assembly of Virginia, do enact that no man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship, place, or ministry whatsoever, nor shall be enforced, restrained, molested, or burdened in his body or goods, or shall otherwise suffer on account of his religious opinions or belief, but that all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinions in matters of religion, and that the same shall in no wise diminish, enlarge, or affect their civil capacities." So I think that one thing that's...
So religion couldn't be a litmus test for public office.
Couldn't be a litmus test for public office. But also, I think one of the things that's really important, what Jefferson is saying here, it's freedom of religion, but it's also freedom from religion.
Yeah.
Which is a thing, something that I think people forget. Another thing I think that's gotten really confused nowadays is that...
Because that separation of church and state was just as important, and this is in the writings of, you know, of the revolutionary leaders at the time, this really comes out, doesn't tend to come out so much today, but that separation of church and state, the words of which come from Jefferson, was just as much to protect religion from government as to protect the citizens of a free state from a government-imposed religion.
Right.
See what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right. What I was getting at is a lot of folks are really confused about the religions of the founding fathers, and you hear a lot about this nowadays, and there have been books, and I know a lot of folks are going to disagree with me on this, but in my mind, Jefferson was a deist. People are really confused as to what deists were in those days. They were akin to the early Unitarians, but the Unitarian faith has evolved over the years. So the modern Unitarians and the Unitarians from 200 years ago are two very, very different animals. Jefferson being a deist, and I've heard people on the radio talking about how he could not possibly have been a deist if he uses God, the creator, or if he talks about natural, the God of nature, or things like that.
But that's what deism was.
But deists actually did believe that there was a God. It just was not the God that most Christians believe in. It was a God that was more of a clockmaker, somebody who puts together a mechanism and then sets it in motion and steps back and doesn't get involved in the day-to-day affairs of us mortal humans here on planet Earth.
So the idea that this force or power or spirit would actually embody a human being, deists didn't believe that.
That's right.
This doesn't fit with. So he didn't believe in the divinity of Jesus.
He did not believe in the divinity of Jesus, and like most
deists, or anyone,
and like most deists, Jefferson didn't believe in any of the miracles of the Bible for a very good enlightenment, a very good scientific reason, and that is they couldn't be proven. So if you couldn't prove that they had happened, then he's not going to believe them, and he doesn't believe that anybody should waste their time believing them because they can't be proved. Now, all that being said, he believed wholeheartedly in the moral teachings of Jesus, and that's why, and I know a lot of people are upset about this even today, that's why Jefferson cut out the Gospels out of the Bible in four different languages and pasted them in and created his own Bible, which he didn't call the Jefferson Bible, as the government printing office called it, but he called it the Life and Teachings of Jesus of Nazareth. So when people ask today, and this is a really important question, I know I'm kind of going off on this religious tangent, religion of the founding fathers kind of tangent. I think we can slice it very finely, and we could say, were most of the founding fathers devout Christians? I don't believe they were, actually, devout Christians in today's sense.
Yeah.
But did they believe in the teachings of Jesus? Absolutely. So was the country founded on Christian beliefs? Absolutely. But were the founders, most of them, devout Christians? I don't think so.
Let's go to the phones. Barbara is with us. Barbara, how you doing?
Hey, you are driving a stake into the heart of the Tea Party, which wounds me so, especially
yeah, I bet.
Since the Tea Party has no heart. So where's the stake going to go?
Where's that? How's this drive a stake, Barbara?
I'm being sarcastic.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see what you're saying.
I am being so sarcastic. I love what you just said. It makes sense. And it's so seldom that one hears sense on AM radio.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Barbara,
except
for calling.
Except on Koi Show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
and, of
Barbara.
Course, then there was the Treaty of Tripoli. It's 1796, which said, quote, as the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion, as it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of Muslim men. Anyway, you could Google that and look that up. It's very interesting, very historic treaty, one of the first entered into by this new fledgling nation. And they said right up there in the text, no, we're not founded on a religion.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Jefferson had a Quran in his library. So his freedom of religion extends to all religions and all beliefs, including no beliefs in religion.
And
so his freedom of religion extends to atheists.
We're talking with Rick Britton, and we're running out of time here, but to put a bow on it, that is what the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom was all about, 10 years
that's
ahead
right.
of James Madison's First Amendment to the Bill of Rights.
I think that's right.
Virginia was the first state that passed a law that said the government can't tell you what to think.
It's the beginning of religious freedom in the United States, and it unfortunately, it doesn't include the phrase separation of church and state, and that's in a letter many decades later by Jefferson to the Danbury Baptist.
When that's when he used that language for the first time.
For the first time, right.
Yeah. There you go. Good stuff. Thank you, Rick Britton.
Thank you.
What's
Enjoyed
next
it.
Week?
Next week, we're actually going to talk about his service as governor of the state of Virginia during the American Revolution. Not his best years.
Not pretty stuff. Yeah, not pretty stuff at all. But we'll get the details on that with Rick Britton next week. You can check him out online at rickbritton.com, and you can take his course over at the Senior Center. Give him a call, 974-6538.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.